Radiolab is supported by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Wait, you're listening.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
You're listening to Radiolab.
Radiolab.
Shorts!
From
WNYC.
See?
Yes.
And NPR.
Hey, I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
This is Radiolab,
the podcast.
So today we're going to do something a little different on the podcast. We're going to present a story that you and I ran into
in Chicago. The Third Coast Audio Festival. It won an award, this story, and it's just quite wonderful.
It's really cool.
This is about soccer.
And it happened to remind us about a show that we're putting together for the spring on the topic of symmetry.
Chemistry, symmetry, hair parting symmetry.
All different kinds.
And by the way.
But that's later.
Yes.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. You were about to say the cool part.
It turns out that we get to do this show not only on the radio, but in three fabulous cities in the United States of America.
Live.
Yeah.
We have shows in New York. Unfortunately, that one's sold out. But we'll be in LA March 23rd and Seattle March 30th. And it's going to be really fun. And it'll be about symmetry.
So which takes us back to our subject.
Soccer, which...
at least appears quite symmetrical.
Yeah, you got two teams.
11 people on each side.
That's right. You got two coaches, two sets of fans.
Field. However, there are two people on that field, the goalkeepers on either side, who are living in a very different psychological universe from the rest of the athletes. And that's the subject.
The loneliness of the goalkeeper.
And the reporter is Hardeep Singh Kohli, who is... Well, first of all, he was in his earlier life a goalkeeper himself. He's a book author and a regular presenter on the BBC. And he's talking to a guy named Bob Wilson, who's goalkeeper for a very famous British soccer team.
Arsenal.
That's right.
In the 60s and 70s.
That's the golden age.
And the piece begins with the following question.
Bob, what is it about goalkeepers? Are they a breed apart?
They're the only individual in what is a team game. In other words, the other 10 guys can make numerous mistakes in a game. Even the star striker, he can miss 5, 6, 8 chances in a game and score a winning goal in the 89th minute of a match, and he goes home the hero. And the reverse situation, that is the goalkeeper, this lonely individual, the only one who's allowed to use his hands with the purpose of negating the game, with the whole purpose of a game of football is to score goals. And the one villain in the piece is the bloke between the sticks, the goalie. And all the other 10 guys around you understand that as well. They do think you're crazy. You are putting yourself in this position where for 89 minutes you do the reverse, you play brilliantly. And in the 90th minute... you make a positional error, or the ball moves, swerves and dips, and it looks as if it's your fault.
I've got this image of goalkeepers, mostly because I was that goalkeeper that leapt for that high ball only to see the ball go into the back of the net. And that moment, can you explain to me that moment, Bob, when the rest of the team are walking back to the halfway line as you're picking the ball up out of the net?
You're alone. I mean, I can give you a very, very good example of playing in an FA Cup final. And 5 days earlier, we've gone to White Hart Lane and we've become champions of England. And so we've got an opportunity to become only the second club that century to win the double. So we go, we're playing Liverpool.
With everything to play for in the 1971 Cup final.
As Eddie and Kelly, I've had the best season I've ever had in my career. And there's suddenly Steve Highway cuts in from the left wing. I've probably got it wrong by a yard and a half.
Highway on the edge of the box, a chance here for Liverpool perhaps, and it's there! Steve Highway!
He strikes for goal, and it flew in the back of the net. 1-0 down. the double's out the window, and Bob Wilson is suddenly the guy who is likely to cost Arsenal the double.
Steve Highway makes it 1-0 for Liverpool.
And as I spun round on my pants on the floor, Frank McClintock, our captain, put his hands on his hips and actually mouthed, "You stupid..."
It's there! Charlie George!
It didn't cost us. Charlie George won us the double. I finished up being Arsenal's player of the year in the double season. Fantastic. But to my dying day, when people meet me and they say, "Oh, what did you do with Steve Highway then?" It always comes up. Not the million good saves I might have made. It's always about, "Oh, you got your near post wrong, didn't you?"
Now, here's a challenge that I've never understood. If you're a goalkeeper in a team that isn't very good, you're constantly vigilant. The ball's always coming at you. If, however, you're Bob Wilson playing behind 10 of the best players in the world at that time, for 89 minutes of a 90-minute game, you don't have a great deal to do. How do you stay focused?
Did you remember the Bionic Man? Mm. When the ball was at the other end of the field, I imagined that the guy on the ball, the opponent, was Steve Austin. So he could turn around at any part of the pitch, 60 yards away, 70 yards away, 110 yards away, and strike a ball towards my goal.
Rapidiera still on the attack. There's the cross in! Wagner with a header! Fantastic save by Schmeichel! Absolutely
by the byline, left-footed cross. Here's the chance. Oh, must score and doesn't. Brilliant save by Basso. Tips it on.
Left-foot shot driven long. Schmeichel saves again.
Great save. What a crucial man he is.
Right across the area, chance for Brazil. And it's merged, not there. What a magnificent save by Gordon Banks. A superb piece of running by Jardino. Went down the right, tossed the ball. And there was Pelé coming in.
Charlie, go out wide.
That's it, back, that's it.
That's it, challenge. Go, Ned. That's it, off you go. Go on.
Here we are. Sunday mid-morning. South coast of England, Brighton, and in the background you can hear some under-16s, 22 of them, chasing a ball around a pitch. Well, actually, technically speaking, it's 20 of them. And there's two goalkeepers either side, on their own, with no one to talk to, the game to watch, the backs of their colleagues and the face of their opposition. Almost poetic. It's me getting carried away with myself. Mom will cross the road. I'm here to meet a man called Jem Wall, who is an actor. That was a good wee tackle there. Sorry, slightly put off by a great wee tackle. Now, Jem is acting in a Peter Flannery play called The Boy's Own Story, which is all about a goalkeeper.
Excuse me, mate. Jem Wall.
Yeah, how are they?
All right.
So we've just kicked off then?
We've just kicked off, but we're about 10 minutes in and the Preston Panthers are a goal down, I'm afraid.
Was that a goalkeeping error?
It was not goalkeeping error. I'm a fully paid up member of the Goalkeepers Union, so I think even if it had gone through his hands, I wouldn't have said it's the keeper's fault. No, it was a very good long range shot and a very good midfield pass, so...
See, now, I don't mean to be cruel, right, but see that goalkeeper there?
Yeah.
Is that our keeper or their keeper?
No, that's their keeper. Okay. Our keeper's the quality-looking keeper with the yellow top
All right. And
the gloves.
See their keeper? That's exactly what I looked like when I was a boy. I don't mean to be cruel.
How would you describe him, then?
Well, slightly lardy. Slightly lardy.
I don't play in goal, but I coach the goalkeepers down here. But I have to say, when I was a kid, the idea of going in goal... just baffled me. I thought, why would you want to go in goal? I've always been fascinated by the kids who want to go in goal. But later on in my life, when I became an actor, I ended up doing a play about a goalkeeper. So I got to meet goalkeepers. I even did 2 days training down here with Brighton and Hove Albion. Oh, no.
Is that a goal?
Yeah, that's 2-0.
Sorry, that's 2-0 to the other team. Look at the keeper, he's looking skyward.
And he won't pick the ball up.
He won't pick the ball up. It's gone actually through the net.
I mean, nobody, that should have been cleared.
The cross should never have come in.
No.
But the goalkeeper got the blame for that.
Yeah. I think goalkeepers get a rough deal. I mean, when we were doing the play, it was a very simple set. It was simply goalpost and net. Okay, so full size. And set in the penalty area of John McKenna, the greatest goalkeeper never to play for England. So he's asking for the ball, talking, you know, as players, as goalkeepers are supposed to do, to keep themselves mentally alert. And the thing is, he never gets the ball. They hate him. The team hate him, and they will never pass to him. Good tackle, Dave. Lay off, Dave. Come on, Dave, if you need me. Oh. All right, don't then. Well played, Dave. See what I mean? They'd rather do without me. I'm the last line of defence. When I'm called into the game, it means they've failed. And they don't like that. Do you, lads? Of course, they're glad to have me here just in case. Glad it's me throwing myself about. Glad it's my head that goes in when the boots are flying. But they'd do without me if they could. Wouldn't ya? The object of their game is to score goals. The object of mine is to stop them. I'm here to spoil their game. I can't win a game. I can only lose it. So how can I be one of them? Not that I want to be one of them. When to them, I'm just a necessary evil. Go on, kid, have a shot. Let one go. No, 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 don't tackle it. I could have saved that.
Greg saved the ball, tipped it up in the air, but not enough to put it over the bar. It came down behind him, and as he went for it, so he was charged by centre-forward Lofthouse into the net, ball as well.
I was a young goalkeeper. I played for St John's Primary School in Sevenoaks.
Poet and keeper, Murray Lachlan Young. Keeper in the loosest sense of the word.
We played a local big team, the sort of Manchester United of the area, which was Amherst School, and I think they beat us 17-0.
The scoring of which goal broke the young Murray Lachlan Young?
I think it was probably about 5 or 6-0 when I realised that there was probably only about 10 minutes of the game gone. The team had gone from being encouraging to looking the other way.
How long did it take you before you went back in goal?
I think about 32 years.
It may just be a coincidence that you are a poet and a writer and a performer. Do you think there is a commonality in that experience of the creative?
For people who think they're a bit special, perhaps it seems to be the ideal place, because as a striker, you can always be partnered with another striker, but there is only one goalkeeper and he gets to wear a different strip than the rest of the team and has his own universe to operate in.
That 4-0?
That's 4-0. That's not even half time. We are getting taken apart here.
I wonder how much of his confidence has gone
a
there.
A lot. I bet a lot. Unlucky lads, heads up.
Carragher heads the ball. Oh, it's a mistake by Dudek. Carragher headed the ball back to the Polish goalkeeper. He just didn't pick it up. Extraordinary.
When I think of how I used to feel when I let a goal in, ridiculous. That feeling of letting everybody down.
Oh, I say, and Toby has let it go right through his body and into the back of the net. That is an appalling goalkeeping mistake.
I used to go home after a match at City and literally shed tears over a goal I'd let in, blaming myself for the one that beat us, going over and over and over it in my head. Why didn't I go for the cross? Why didn't I see him coming in on the back stick? Where was my cover? Yeah, where was my cover? Was the fullback sitting at home crying his eyes out? Yes.
Oh, it's been missed by Robertson. The ball's gone into the net. Simunic is going to claim this. Oh, what a howler that is by England.
Poor old Paul Robinson, the England goalkeeper, was undone when a back pass came towards him. He aimed a kick at it, missed. The ball went into the goal. It wasn't his fault. The ball bobbled. It was a goal. It was looked comic. It looked like Robinson's fault. He knows it wasn't, and yet it still destroyed him.
Chief sports writer of the Times, Simon Barnes. Another writer, another man who spends his time alone hoping to make a mark on the world. And yes, another former goalkeeper. We're everywhere. See, I think I'm developing a theory here, and Simon's got a roll call of loners and mavericks to support it.
Yes, the Renaissance goalkeepers. It's a fine list, and it begins with Albert Camus, author of The Outsider. All goalkeepers are, by definition, étrangers. But Camus famously said that all that I know most surely about morality and the obligations of man, I know from sport. Others include Julio Iglesias, Che Guevara. Che Guevara was a goalkeeper out of necessity because he loved football. But he had asthma, so he couldn't cut it as an outfielder. The late Pope, John Paul II, was also a goalkeeper. And Vladimir Nabokov, who liked to be seen as sublimely different from the crowd. And this was what Vladimir Nabokov, a goalkeeper and occasional novelist, wrote about the higher of his two arts. As with folded arms I leant against the left goalpost, I enjoyed the luxury of closing my eyes, and thus I would listen to my heart knocking and feel the blind drizzle on my face, and hear in the distance the broken sounds of the game, and think of myself as of a fabulous exotic being in an English footballer's disguise, composing my verse in a tongue nobody understood about a remote country nobody knew. Small wonder I was not very popular with my teammates. I think that's a beautiful moment of serenity that only a goalkeeper can know in the middle of a game of football. That in the bustle of it all, you have time to yourself, time to reflect, time which many goalkeepers eventually use to destroy themselves, certainly to destroy their sporting nerve.
Now, that comment by Simon, Che Guevara played in goal because of severe childhood asthma. Now, I've done a bit of research on that list of Renaissance goalies, and you know, Albert Camus developed TB as a youngster. Yes. Vladimir Nabokov nearly died of pneumonia as a child and then was traumatised by having to flee revolutionary Russia. Pope John Paul II, mother died when he was 9, brother 3 years later. Makes you think.
There is a sense in which choosing to play goalkeeper does show understanding that one is not as other people, and certainly grief and trauma can do that, particularly in children. You make accept that your position is to be not the same as the rest.
And what I consider proof from the BBC archives, childhood goalkeeper and solo violinist, emphasis on the word solo, Itzhak Perlman, 4 years old, polio.
I did football, I was goalie, because I worked with crutches so I could stop balls a little easier. You know, I stop them with my feet, with my crutches.
The man hits that again, and this time you're going through, he shoots himself, a terrific one, and Sidlow just bangs it over the crossbar. He just bent like an arc of a bow there, and just deflected that one. It was going right for the top corner there, all the way, and it was a lovely save by Sidlow. That was a grand shot, the grand save.
When I see a great goal, it seems to me an incomplete experience. You should have a great shot followed by a great save to be a full, complete and rounded experience. I don't expect people to understand that. In fact, I hope people don't understand it. Being misunderstood is part of the goalkeeper's stock in trade. You wouldn't be a goalkeeper unless you wanted to be misunderstood.
How can I not be obsessed with failure? If I succeed, what have I done? What have I created? Nothing. Even the poorest goals go into the record books. Great saves are forgotten.
This could be a Panthers goal.
I love your eternal optimism. Yeah.
You have
the
to.
The Panthers get somewhere near the 18-yard box and Jem's thinking it could be a goal.
So that's 4-0 at half-time. That's not good.
He's in tears. The Preston Panthers keeper's in tears. Poor lad. His gloves are off. He's crying. Poor boy's crying. It's under-16s football on a Sunday morning. Can you hear that?
I tell you what it is, the great goalkeepers. When all else fails, those guys in front of you, those 10 guys, need to look round and say, the goalie will save us. Now that's the difference once you acquire greatness, true greatness. And very few goalkeepers really acquire that aura about them.
And one of the greatest? Gary Sprague.
There's Best going into the box, ahead of first time, and another great save there by Sprague.
Brilliant keeper. But you know what? And this just about sums it up. It doesn't matter that he kept hundreds of clean sheets. Forget the cup and championship successes. Never mind that he saved the blushes of countless dodgy defenders. And there are plenty of dodgy defenders. The thing that defines Gary Sprague, the loneliest of all lonely keepers, is the goal he scored against himself in 1967. And he's not even Scottish. Gone yourself, Gary, son.
We were playing at Liverpool one day, and 3 minutes before half-time, cross came across, I caught the ball. Terry Cooper was on the left wing, and he shouted to throw it to him. Just as I was going to throw it to him, I seen Ian Callaghan run to him, so I changed my mind. I've done it millions of times, just brought the ball back to my chest. But on this occasion, I missed my chest and went over my shoulder and right in front of the cop. And just as I was walking off, the DJ says, "We dedicate this record to Gary. Des O'Connor just made this record, Careless Hands." I let my heart
fall into careless hands. David Young gets the return ball from Derbyshire, lets the shot go, and it's gone through Lehman's hands and into the net. What a howler from Jens Lehman.
Here come Estonia, and the shot driven in, and Robertson spills it, for goodness sake, he's a net for nothing. Justin Carlson, got straight through it. Pratchard's shot from 25 yards. And Carson was nowhere near it. Terrible fumble by the goalkeeper.
That's the second half about to start. And that's the Preston Panthers keeper walking back to his goal alone. Alone and four goals down. Do you know what? I wish I could say to you that I didn't know how that felt. I know how that feels. I remember now why I stopped being a goalkeeper. Careless hands that can hold on to
love. Careless Hands from Elvis Presley.
Do you think he was a goalie?
He had to have been a goalie. No one could have captured the tenderness, the loss, and the shame as well as Elvis.
There's a lot of shame in his music.
Yeah.
It could have been forged between those two goalposts. Oh, wait. I'm now being told that was not Elvis. Okay, forget it. Thanks to producer Adam Fowler and the presenter of that piece, Hardeep Singh Kohli.
And it was a Ladbroke Radio production. It was originally broadcast on BBC Radio 4.
I'm Jad Abumrad.
I'm Robert Krulwich.
We hope to see you at those live shows.
Yeah.
Or at least at the next podcast.
Hi, Radio Lab. My name is Melanie McCarty. I'm from Washington, D.C. Radio Lab is supported in part by the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, enhancing public understanding of science and technology in the modern world. More information about Sloan at www.sloan.org. Okay, I guess that's it. Thanks, guys.
End of message.
Radiolab is supported by the John Templeton Foundation, funding research and catalyzing conversations that inspire people with awe and wonder. Learn about the researchers making the latest discoveries in the science of well-being, complexity, forgiveness, and free will at templeton.org/podcast.